Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
I've got a really inspiring story for you on the podcast today. Joining us from Bel Air, Maryland is Will Mitchell. Will's got a great story. He's been buying rental properties for less than a year. And in the last year, he's bought 7 properties using very little of his own money. He's been following the BRRRR strategy where you buy a property, you rehab the property, you rent it out, you refinance, and you repeat. And he's just been doing this over and over and over again. So on the show today, we're going to talk about a couple of his deals. We're going to go over a few of the mistakes he's made along the way. We'll talk about the numbers, and we'll also go over how he built a relationship with a community bank that's been financing the long-term debt on his rental properties. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Will.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to NaradaRealEstate.com. That's NaradaRealEstate.com.
Hey, Will, welcome to the podcast. Why don't you tell us what you're doing today, and then we'll kind of take a step back and figure out how you got there.
So I am with the rentals. I have 7 rental properties. I'm doing the BRRRR strategy where I purchase the properties in private money or hard money and refi out with a community bank that I've formed a relationship with. And it's been working out pretty well so far, and I plan to continue this model.
And in the last 11 months, you've bought 7 rental properties, kind of doing the same BRRRR strategy over and over again.
That is correct.
That's awesome. Now, let's take a step back. So when you first got into real estate, you wanted to flip houses, and you had flipped a few houses, and then at some point you kind of realized that the way to build long-term wealth would be through owning real estate, through owning rentals. And you had kind of a couple of almost false starts where you bought a property to rent it out, but you ended up selling it. What happened there?
Okay, so it's funny because when I started in the real estate business, I literally knew nothing. I mean, I didn't know what hard money was. I didn't know what a closing cost was. I didn't know about property taxes. So all I knew is that I saw these guys on TV flipping houses and making money, and that's, you know, I just wanted to cash big checks. Mm-hmm. And so I flipped a couple houses, and then I'd heard about the BRRRR strategy, and I was like, wow, that's like really interesting. Because beforehand I thought, man, you have to have a lot of money to buy rentals. You know, I didn't know about how bank financing worked and, you know, the refi cash out. So before then my mind wasn't really open. And then I found out about the BRRRR strategy, and I was like, it was like, wow, like mm-hmm. this is how you scale rental properties.
Right. Yep.
So I bought one property with the intention to rent it, and it honestly would have been a phenomenal rental property. It would have been the best one I owned numbers wise if I would have kept it. But I wound up wholesaling that property for a huge profit, like $30-some thousand profit. So it was tough to keep when like I had this huge check
right
dangling in front of my face. And then the same thing kind of happened again. I bought a property at auction, and this one I actually started renovating, and about halfway through the renovation, you know, I realized the comps were about $15,000 higher than I originally thought. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna sell this thing. And again, I sold it, and made a nice
yeah
payday. And
I mean,
it was
that's
really difficult to hold a property when, you know, these big checks are dangling in front of you.
Yeah, that's I can totally understand. I mean, to walk away from $30,000 can be difficult when you're looking, all right, well, I can rent this out and make a few hundred bucks a month, or I could take $30,000 now. But I think you kind of realized at some point that the way to build wealth is to keep these properties, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if you ask the richest people, all the richest people in the world own things.
Right.
You know, they own assets.
Right. Where like wholesaling or flipping houses, it's a job. I mean, so
you're always chasing the next check.
Exactly. Right. So tell me about your first property that you ended up keeping.
Okay. So this is a kind of an interesting story. My aunt and uncle, my uncle, his father had passed away, unfortunately. And, you know, they were living in Florida. This property was in Baltimore County. And I had talked to him. I said, look, you know, I can help you move this property. They didn't want to keep the property. They wanted to just kind of get rid of the property. It was in not terrible shape. But his father was the original owner from 1950 or 1952. And I had worked out a deal with them. I tried to make the process as easy as possible for them. They never had to come up and do anything. And I bought the property from them. And that is how I got my first rental deal off market from a family member, and put a little bit of money into it and got a tenant.
Awesome. So what was the purchase price, and then how much did it cost to fix it up?
I think I paid $70,000 for that property. I think I put about $7,000 or $8,000 into it. I didn't do a whole lot to it.
Yeah.
Carpet, paint, just some minor repairs. Yeah, that's about it. I think I was in the property for under $90,000.
Perfect.
Probably about $85,000, $90,000.
Awesome. And then what were you able to rent it out for?
I originally rented it out for $1,500 a month.
How did everything go as far as when you found your first tenant and got everything up and running?
Okay, so I made a lot of mistakes. Well, the first thing I did was I called a lead inspector in the Baltimore City area, Baltimore County area. The lead paint is a big thing. I did know enough to do that. I called a lead inspector. They did a lead inspection. Luckily, the property was built in 1952 and was lead free. So I got a lead free certificate. That was like step one. And then I had an associate that I was dealing with at the time. He said, hey, I have somebody that is looking for a place in that area, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're really good. Let me send them to you. So I basically took a referral for a tenant, and I kind of looked past some, you know, credit issues and stuff like that based on the referral, which turned out to not be a good idea. But they did move in, and they stayed for, I don't know, about 9 months or something like that. And then I had to have them evicted eventually for failure to pay.
Okay. Is there anything that you would do differently, or anything that, I mean, I guess at the time you didn't know, but like as far as screening the tenant or anything you could have done differently to avoid that eviction?
Sure. Yeah, I definitely could have, screened the tenant. You know, my thing was, I just got the property. I wanted to get it rented.
Yeah.
My first one. I hate to say it, but I probably would have taken like almost the first person that gave me a security deposit.
Right.
You know, and, you know, that has changed just because that was kind of a painful process, you know, with the failure to pay rent and rent court and the eviction and all that kind of, and the turnover. It was a lesson learned. I wouldn't have done anything different because I honestly learned a lot from the process.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I didn't know at the time.
You know, I think that's an important thing for people to learn, maybe for someone that's getting started. So like that one mistake of not screening that tenant, how much do you think that costs you between lost rent when you were evicting the tenant, and then you had some vacancy for a while, and you probably had to pay to fix the property up? Like, what do you think you lost?
I think around $7,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, but, I mean,
but I will say in that $7,000, I did improve the property.
Okay.
So it wasn't a total loss. In that $7,000, I remodeled the bathroom. Maybe a little less than that because I did add value to the property.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Getting long-term financing in place is a lot of times the most difficult part of building out a rental portfolio. So we're going to talk to Will about exactly how he did it. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor today. It's Rentler.com. If you're looking for one website where you can automate a lot of the tasks that you have to do as a landlord, Rentler might be exactly what you're looking for. They can help you with every aspect of your rental business, from managing rental listings to accepting online rent applications. They can help you screen tenants. They have all the forms you would need, from leases to applications to move-in checklists. And the coolest thing is you can accept online payments. So you can offer your tenants the ability to pay out of their checking account by ACH, or they can pay you by credit card, whatever is better for them. Rentler has a special offer just for our listeners. They're offering either a free year of ACH payment processing or a free month of credit card processing. If you want to find out more, just go to tryrentler.com/free. That's tryrentler, tryrentler.com/free. That's tryrentler.com/free. All right, Will, let's get back to the interview. So talk me through how you financed the long-term financing of your rental properties.
Sure. So just going back to that original property, mm-hmm. I bought that and I borrowed, I didn't borrow 100% of the money, which is what I try and do now. But I think I borrowed like $50,000 on that one. And I told my private lender, I said, look, will you give me a 2-year note on this interest only? Because I was terrified of going to the bank.
Yeah.
And you know, going through that process. Like it was this huge fear to me for some reason, just because I've never done it before.
Yeah.
And I wound up refining out of that property in like 2 months.
Okay.
Like it was so quick.
Now, that first property, so you got a loan just on that one property?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Awesome.
Yeah, the first one, I just did the single property, and I actually have that in a 7% interest rate, which is not great.
Yeah.
But just to get the first one out of the way, I got all my money back on the refi. I might actually walked away with a couple thousand in my pocket.
And you got all your money back because you had bought a property, you fixed it up, and now it was worth more than what you paid for it. Awesome.
Yeah, it appraised for more, and I was able to get all my money back on the refi.
Awesome. That's great. So you've got your first property, you've got no money in it, and it's cash flowing every month. That's perfect.
Absolutely. Yeah,
awesome.
I was very happy with the way the first one went. But then, you know, the way my mind works, I was like, okay, how do I get this to be better?
Yeah.
You know, because 7% is like, okay, it works, but it's high. You know,
right,
even for commercial loans, it's like pretty high. It's on the higher end. So I discussed with – I have a couple of bankers that I work with at a community credit union in Harford County. And, you know, I sat down with him and I said, look, you know, I love working with you guys, but I need to figure something out to get some better rates, because my plan is to do a lot of these. And, you know, I would like to do them with you guys, but we got to do something about the rate.
Yeah.
So they said, look, well, we do Harford County properties. We can give you, you know, more favorable rates, 5.5% or, you know, 5.75%. And I said, well, the problem is there's not a ton of deals in Harford County. There's a lot less inventory. The properties in most cases don't cash flow as great. So I said, what if I bundled properties together, put them all in the same note, and put a Harford County property in with a package of, you know, some Baltimore County, Baltimore City properties? Could I get the favorable rates and terms? And, you know, to my pleasant surprise, they said yes. So since then, that's kind of been my model is, you know, get a Harford County property, get a couple city properties or Baltimore County properties, you know, purchase them in short-term money, hard money, private money, renovate them, throw tenants in there, and then bring them to them, have them do the appraisals, and cash out.
That's beautiful.
Of the whole package.
Now, how did you get that meeting with the person at the bank? Did you just walk in there one day and talk to somebody, or did you have to kind of figure out who the person to talk to was?
So this is a very small bank. They had one guy running their commercial department like 2 years ago.
Okay.
When I opened up my account there, I think there was only one guy working there. Since then, they've grown. They have two guys. And, you know, I just talked to them. I told them about my business. You know, anytime I get a chance, anytime I go into the bank, I sit in their offices. I tell them how my business is going. You know, we talk about how we can work together. I just became a familiar face.
Right.
I became a friendly face.
You were kind of building that relationship over time.
Sure.
So you didn't just walk in there one day and ask for a bunch of money. They knew you.
That's good. And they, you know, from the beginning, they told me, like, you know, I'm going to have a hard time to getting the money, you know, as far as, you know, now I have a line of credit with them. In the beginning, it wasn't like they were just saying, here's a $100,000 line of unsecured line of credit.
Right.
You know, that happened over time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just slowly building the relationship, nurturing the relationship. And the same thing with the private lenders and the hard money guys. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, build a resume. You know, do the right thing, be a stand-up guy, do what you say what you, you know, just be honest and be a stand-up person.
That's great. So when you got the go-ahead from them that, okay, we'll do that, we'll go ahead and we'll bundle a few properties together into one mortgage, did you go out then and get three or four properties that you could refi with them, or how did that come about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know when we had that conversation originally. I don't know if I had already started, if I had already had some more properties. I really can't remember,
yeah.
But I know after I kind of got the green light, that was like my mission. I was like, okay, I picked up one in Harford County. I was like, all right, now I just got to marry these with a couple other properties. And it worked out to where they were kind of all finishing up at the same time. I said, look, here's the properties. I sent them, you know, all the metrics on the properties. Like, here's what it's going to rent for. This is what I'm hoping it's going to appraise for. This is what I'm looking to cash out of it. Here's going to be the cash flow. Here's going to be the debt service coverage ratio. Like, the numbers work. Here they all are. And they love that. Like, they love when you say, like, when they have something like that to send to their underwriters.
Right.
Like,
yeah, so everything
it makes their job so much easier.
Right. They could look at it and they could say, okay, this is a good deal. This is something we want to fund.
Right. So they really like it when you have your numbers together. The only problem I actually ran into with doing refis in the past is before I was running my fix and flip business and my rental business all under the same LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got tricky with a cash flow standpoint for the underwriters.
Oh, okay.
Because I had, like, you know, maybe, you know, $750,000 of debt on
right.
this company that has no debt, that has no cash flow.
Right.
There's properties that are sitting there being renovated, waiting to be sold. And they're like, well, actually, your debt service coverage ratio is negative.
Right.
You know, so I actually, since then, I you know, that was like a little obstacle getting through with the underwriters. But since then, I'd separated the two businesses, and now it's like no issue.
That's great. Okay, so how many properties would they put into one mortgage?
They haven't given me a limit.
Okay.
I don't think I'd want to do more than like maybe four or five.
Okay.
In case I wanted to like unload some of them.
Yeah.
It would be a little bit more difficult if I put 10 or something in a package.
Okay, so you get four or five properties, you get that bundled up into one mortgage, and then when they give you when they originate that mortgage, then they're paying off your hard money lenders, your private investors, everyone that initially loaned you the money.
Sure, all my private lenders are in first lien position on the properties when they give me the money. So yeah, they get paid off, and I get the change, so to speak.
Talk me through how it works as far as you've got several properties that are paying you rent, and then you've got this big mortgage payment. Can you give me some numbers on like what the mortgage is and then how much the rent checks are?
Sure. So for the one package deal I have, my mortgage for all three, it's a three property package. The mortgage is 17 and change a month.
Okay.
The rents on those properties are one rents for $1,500 a month.
Okay. So, I mean, that one property almost covers your mortgage.
Exactly. So that one, the one property rents for 15, one property rents for 1375, and then one property rents for 1250.
Wow. That's awesome. That is beautiful. So that's basically what you're doing. Like you're buying properties with private money, hard money. You're fixing them up, and then you're refining out of the hard money or private money into a commercial loan, and
correct.
Then you're just cash flowing like crazy. I mean, that's
the cash flow is not bad so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That is
the cash flow, and then the other big thing, Dan, is the equity. It's like,
right,
you know, you're getting, I'm getting these loans at 70% loan to value. So
yeah. And so
based on those numbers, I'm retaining 30% equity.
Right.
In all these properties.
Now, which is awesome. I mean, yeah. So you're creating a lot of wealth, and then you're also creating cash flow. I mean, this is a really great model that you're doing. Now, one thing that you said is that when you were first starting out, that getting the right mindset was important. What do you mean by that?
The passive income. You know, it's like the passive income is really where the freedom comes into play. It's like,
absolutely.
Again, going back to like, you know, the other jobs that I have, like, you know, the flipping and the wholesaling stuff. It's a job.
Yep. Yep. Totally. Totally.
So then the other mindset part is the risk tolerance, I guess you could say. It's I have come to terms with like the worst case scenario in the, kind of the real estate business. And honestly, the risk is much lower in the rental space than it is in like the retail rehab space and things like that. Because with the rentals, you got the cash flow.
Right.
I mean, everybody's going to need a place to live, especially I have, you know, some program tenants that, you know, the money's going to continue to be direct deposited into my bank account regardless.
I mean, the rentals are a lot more forgiving. I mean, with doing fix and flip, if you make a mistake, if you're off on your numbers, I mean, you could lose a lot of money.
Sure.
Where with rentals, like if you make a mistake, as long as you let time go by, like
exactly.
it's gonna fix itself.
Exactly. It's so, like, okay, you know, it took me a year to break even on that property because I spent a little before I start actually profiting instead of cash flowing immediately.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And then the other thing with the retail rehabs, it's like if something crazy happens with the market and all of a sudden I'm stuck holding $1 million of hard money loans on properties that I can't sell.
Right.
That's a problem.
Game over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, well, it sounds like you're off to a really good start. So in the last 11 months, you've bought 7 properties, which is really aggressive. Like, do you see yourself moving at the same pace going forward?
I actually see myself moving at a faster pace.
So
here's my thought, Dan. It's like, I don't have a number, so to speak, of like where I want to get to as far as units, but let's just say 100 units or let's say 80 units.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to buy somewhere between 80 and 100 units in the next 7 or 8 years. When I accomplish that goal, I would like to hold those units for maybe another 10 years. And then at some point when I have the equity, I'd like to sell off half my portfolio, pay the other half off, and own, you know, 40 to 50 units free and clear.
That's beautiful. That's a great plan. That's really, really awesome. Well, I'm really excited to watch you grow your portfolio, and we'll have to check in with you and see how things are going in a year or two.
Sure, I'd love to.
Awesome. Well, if someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to reach you?
You can email me at will@everesthomebuyers.com.
If anyone wants to look that up later on, I'll go ahead and put Will's contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 164. I'm experimenting with doing episodes twice a week the entire month of June, so I'll be back with a new episode on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.